This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The new census data shows us that Texas saw huge growth in the past 10 years, adding nearly 4 million people. Most of that growth happened in urban and suburban counties. Latinos fueled much of that growth, which earned Texas two new congressional seats. Meanwhile, populations in rural Texas counties stagnated or even shrank. The redistribution of Texas population geographically and demographically will play a huge role in the upcoming partisan fight over redistricting. If you have a question or a comment about these census numbers and how they will be used, call in. We want to hear from you. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can also tweet at us at TPRSource, email us at thesource@tpr.org, and you can also text us at that number, 833-877-8255. We're joined this hour by Lloyd Potter, PhD, the Texas State Demographer and director of the Texas Demographic Center at the University of Texas at San Antonio. And Lloyd Potter, welcome back to The Source.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Also with us, Rogelio Sainz, PhD, professor in the Department of Demography at the University of Texas at San Antonio. Rogelio Sainz, it's good to have you back.
Thank you, David. Good to see you.
And also with us, Renee Cross, lecturer in the Department of Political Science and Social Sciences and senior director of the Hobby School of Public Affairs at the University of Houston. Renee Cross, it's good to have you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
All right. So, Lloyd Potter, you're this Texas State Demographer. You had been telling everybody for a long time that Texas is seeing huge growth. We weren't disappointed. Were these census numbers just basically confirming what we already knew, or were there surprises?
Well, yes, they were confirming much of what we already knew. However, there were always like a few little things here that you kind of didn't quite catch before the census. But certainly, we added more people than any other state. I mean, we added almost 4 million new Texans over the decade. Probably about half of those were babies and the other half were migrants. And then we are growing faster as well. So we're a big state and we're growing a lot and we're growing fast. We grew faster than all but two states over the decade.
Rogelio Sainz, the big takeaway for a lot of folks was that people of color made up 95% of Texas population growth, 50% of that from Latinos. We're seeing big growth in the Latino population. We already knew that, but now we have census numbers to confirm that. Does that make a change?
Yeah, what you're seeing, I think, in terms of really puts a mark in terms of the influence of the Latino population and the growth of Texas. And one of the things I think that happened that contributed to that also was that the white population seemed to have declined at a faster pace than anticipated.
And Renee Cross, looking at this through the political lens, people were trying to see what does this mean for representation in Texas. We'd get two new congressional seats, and if 95% of the Texas population growth is coming from people of color, do they get those seats?
Well, we'll see. I mean, Republicans are going to want to keep the seats they have and probably add to. So whether it's the two new seats that are newly drawn or to go back and get the seats they lost in 2018. On the flip side, the Democrats are going to be focusing on just how to use that Hispanic increase to their advantage. And to aid their efforts, of course, are a number of Latino advocacy groups. So there will be a lot of time spent on redistricting software in the coming months.
I can imagine. So Rogelio Sainz, you know, the fact that we're seeing the depopulation in some of these rural counties, and we're not talking a little, in some places we're talking a lot. And for example, in the counties that saw the biggest decrease of the top five in the nation, three are in Texas. And Schlenker County, Texas, has a 29% decrease in population. That area is a county that's south of San Angelo, west of San Antonio, and that's in District 23. Edwards County also saw almost 30% drop in its population over the 10 years, also in the 23rd Congressional District. So I can imagine when they draw the map that they're going to have to, if they want to maintain basically the same shape of that map, they're going to have to dip further into San Antonio to make up for the loss of these rural counties. Then we're going to see probably less representation in the rural, in the urban areas than we have now.
Yeah, this growth that we see in rural areas is really, really vast. As you pointed out, with a couple of counties there, but overall in the state, there were 142 counties, most of those predominantly rural counties that experienced decline. And even more so with a white population, I think there were about 198 counties where the white population declined. So in terms, as you're absolutely right when you're talking about the shapes of those political districts and so forth, that they're going to have to dip into the urban areas. And of course, that results in the lack of representation and cutting into the representation of people of color who provided those two additional congressional seats.
Yeah, so Renee Cross, since you are political science at the Hobby School of Public Affairs at University of Houston, do you think that even though we saw growth in the urban areas, that we will probably see weaker representation when they draw the maps?
Not necessarily, because like you already alluded to, those rural districts are going to have to come in towards those metropolitan areas. I think especially the Dallas-Fort Worth area, both the urban area and the suburban areas. So let's say we lost a lot of population in West Texas or East Texas for that matter. Those districts will encroach in on those suburban districts. And the additional population that's there in the urban districts, I think will be relatively okay. I don't think we're going to see any huge changes as far as less representation.
It's how you draw the map and how many people you take out of the city to balance out the loss of population. And you still could end up having representatives, a congressperson who's going to be more focused on the rural areas than the urban, even though, because that's the political makeup. All right.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay. All right. Well, we shall see, because of this map software, it's pretty amazing. They drill down very deep to the very nitty gritty.
But again, keep in mind that the fastest growing areas are in the suburbs. So the suburbs will have a little bit of population to give.
All right, we're taking a break. We'll come right back. We'll be talking about Texas census data. What does this mean for the political implications? What is driving this growth? Where is the growth coming from? And what does it mean that Texas is growing so fast? If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Stay with us. Back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the Texas census numbers. Big for Texas. A lot of people excited that 4 million additional people were added to Texas. We're getting two new congressional seats. But where did that growth come from? What's driving it? What are the implications for the future of Texas? If you have a question, a comment, give us a call, 833-TPR-TALK. Lloyd Potter, you're the Texas State demographer. How much precision do we have from these numbers? What else can they tell us about the people who that we're counting?
Well, the census really tells us relatively little information about the population and the dynamics. It just is a count of the population by sex, race, ethnicity, and age. So when we look at the change, we're certainly looking at those components, and as Rahelia was just talking about, you know, we had very, 95% of the population change this last decade was attributed to growth of the minority population. But when we look at our change, we're also seeing that about half of it is growth from natural increase, more births than deaths. So we've added a lot of children over the last decade, and those children aren't of the age to vote quite yet. So, those that were born this last decade aren't at 18 yet. But the other half of our population change is from migration, and about 31% of our population change this last decade was from domestic migration, people moving from other states into Texas. And the biggest net sender of domestic migrants has been California, with New York and Illinois behind California in terms of sending domestic migrants to Texas. And then about 21% of our population change has been from international migrants. And of course, people that have moved into Texas over the last 10 years probably have not gained citizenship yet. And so they're not necessarily eligible to vote. So you kind of look at that, those dynamics of change, and it's kind of in somewhat mutes the influence of the change, because again, you're seeing increases in the minority population, but a lot of that is from natural increase. And then you also have the international migrants, who are generally speaking from minority groups. And so their influence on voting is going to be muted relative to the population that's here. Now, that doesn't leave out the fact that we will count everybody when we're going through the process for redistricting and the rebalancing of the districts to get them to the thresholds of the population they need. I mean, they're counting everybody that's in the population, even though they are. Certainly our politicians are looking closely at the characteristics of the people that are living in the areas that they're drawing the lines around.
So one of the categories of information we have is age. What do we know about the aging white population, particularly in the rural areas? Is that a population where we're seeing they're not being replaced?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, as we were talking about, that 156% of our 254 counties lost population. So that's a significant thing. And almost all of those counties are rural. And essentially what's happening in many of these counties is young people are aging up through high school to go to post-secondary education or to find a job. They're going to need to go to a more urbanized area, and they do. And so then they also get there and they get into the family formation stage, and they start having children, not in their county of origin, but in the county that they're now living. So they're not contributing to the birth part of the natural increase in these rural counties. And you have an aging population, which by and large is non-Hispanic white in much of rural Texas. And then that population is aging, the baby boom age generation and so on, aging into high mortality years. In a significant number of our counties, we have natural decrease, more deaths than births. I think we had estimated, somewhere around 86 of our counties last decade had more deaths than births. So it's both this net outflow of migrants and the fact that there's kind of a declining natural decrease, essentially, in many of these counties. So it really highlights this dichotomy in our dynamics in the state, where we added more people than any other state, yet we have well over half of our counties losing population. And Rahilio also mentioned, 198 of our counties had declines in the non-Hispanic white population. And that's essentially being driven by the dynamics that I was just talking about.
I'm going to go to a phone call. And if you want to join the conversation, it's 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. And we have Tony on the line. Tony, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey there, how are you? This is a great conversation. Sheldon Walling in his book Democracy Incorporated talks about something that's called inverted totalitarianism. That's where on the surface it seems democratic, but below the surface it's totally undemocratic. Gerrymandering, redistricting, if you study it, it's straight up brazen political fraud. It's corruption. You don't need to stuff ballots. You don't need to do anything else because you know the results of the election before the first vote is cast. And it's amazing, you know, even the Supreme Court, it's gotten up to the Supreme Court because they challenged it. And the Supreme Court is on board with it. And that says a lot about a political system, and it reinforces the idea that we're not going to get real change, real progressive change, through political means. Those are the facts. Look it up and research it yourself. Gerrymandering is straight-up political fraud, political corruption.
Tony, thank you for the call. Renee Cross is a lecturer in the Department of Political Science and Social Sciences and senior director of the Hobby School of Public Affairs at the University of Houston. Some hostility there about the way that we draw our maps in Texas. Gerrymandering is actually a pretty loaded word. I don't like really to throw it around, but we're seeing that there's a lot of latitude in drawing these maps in order so that politicians can pick their voters, Renee. Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely. And gerrymandering is not a new phenomenon by any stretch. However, our population, whether we're talking Texas or even the nation as a whole, the population is much more diverse. And again, with the addition of very highly advanced, computerized, digitized mapping software, the lines can be manipulated to the nth degree. Much more so than, when we were doing it by hand and with colored markers on big sheets of paper. Now, as far as the statement about the Supreme Court supporting gerrymandering, I agree with the caller to a certain extent. I mean, the Supreme Court has said that partisan gerrymandering is acceptable. In 2003, if you guys recall, we had some controversy here in Texas about the lines being drawn in the decade redistricting case, one legal challenge after another, and come to find out, they ruled that all the districts drawn in Texas were constitutional with the exception of Congressional District 23. Now, partisan gerrymandering, okay, but still racial gerrymandering is not. So that's going to be the tricky part, I believe, because of the huge number in Hispanic increases. So with the population gains, overwhelmingly due to people of color, whether Hispanic and Asian, and to a lesser extent African Americans, the most viable way for Democrats to participate in the process is going to be proving that the new maps discriminate particularly against people of color. That's going to be the key for them to, I think, make any inroads on any of these new district lines, especially in light of the preclearance stipulations from the Voting Rights Act of 1965 no longer being in effect for states like Texas that had previously had to have their new election rules, including district lines, approved. This case, Shelby v. Holder in 2013, knocked down that requirement. This will be the first time that we will be redistricting without that pre-clearance requirement. So that's one.
And so, Renee, the one thing about the Voting Rights Act that still stands is that we're not supposed to break up communities of color to weaken their voting strength, the decision of white v. registrar. And so that seems like that could maybe be chipped away at, or that could be the last part of trying to maintain communities of color being able to vote for representation, Renee?
I think that's right. And that's why on a national level, the Democrats are really trying to push independent redistricting commissions through the For the People Act, which, as you know, is being stalled in Congress right now.
Rogelio Sainz, we were talking about the depopulation of these rural counties, but as those counties get depopulated, we see that there are people moving to these rural counties, but they tend to be either migrants. A large percentage of them are migrants.
Yeah, I think what we see, particularly in East Texas, northern East Texas, we've seen a growth of the Latino population, reminiscent kind of what's happening at the national level, where you see Latinos going into these predominantly areas where there weren't Latinos in the past, many of those rural places in the South and the Midwest. And here in Texas, we're seeing growth of the Latino population in rural parts of the Northeast. One of the other things that I'd like to point out also, and following up what Lloyd was mentioning with respect to the changing age structure and so forth, that in Texas, you really have an age divide where the population 45 and older, whites have been the majority. At ages below 45, it has been Latinos that have been the majority. And the other thing in terms of the significance of that 95 to 5% slip difference in terms of contributing to the growth of Texas, if you look at the population of color, we're talking about the 3.8 million that were added to the Texas population. That represents the cities of Houston and San Antonio together, which together account for about 3.8 million people. And then with the white growth, that with about 187,000, that represents the city of Brownsville. So that really gives you kind of an illustration of the impact of these numbers. And they're going to be extremely difficult to hide in terms of the redistricting, because it is so obvious that the growth is due largely to people of color.
And Rogelio, so in Texas, according to these new census numbers, it's basically 37% for Latinos in Texas and 37% for whites, whites with a smidge more, a decimal point more. What about voting age? How does that break down? Real quick.
Yeah. Yeah, 39.7 and 39.3 are those numbers right now. But one of the things with the differences is that even though the percentages are relatively similar, what you have is a white advantage when it comes to the population that are U.S. That are citizens of voting age, because of the youthfulness of the Latino population. And and those that are non-citizens. So right away, you take about half of the Latino population out of that they're not eligible to vote. But the future, what we have with the youthfulness of the Latino population is each year, 203,000 Latinos are turning age 18, and the great majority of them, about 96%, were born in the United States.
We're taking a break. We'll come back. We'll discuss more. What these numbers tell us, what is in the data of the census for the state of Texas, also here locally in San Antonio and Bexar County. If you have a question or a comment, the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you're a recent person who came to Texas, if you were one of these migrants that we're talking about, that you drove some of this growth, well, why'd you come here? What brought you to Texas? You know, what is your story similar to others? Is your story the reason why Texas has 4 million more people? Give us a call, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Texas census data and the social political implications. We're hearing that a lot of people moved to Texas or were born in Texas over the past 10 years, more so than any other state. We really like to find out why people are moving to Texas. What are the drivers of this growth? If this is you, if you're one of the new transplants, came from California, New York, Illinois, those are the big states that lost population. If you came to Texas, why? What happened? Give us a call. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Lloyd Potter, Texas state demographer, we're seeing that the San Antonio-Austin corridor, that is a fastest growing part of the country. What more can you tell us?
Yeah, that's nothing really too new there. So, but it certainly, Comal County, where New Brunswick is, they think was the second fastest growing county in the country. And Hays County isn't too far behind that. That's where San Marcos is. So we've really seen the Austin-San Antonio corridor fill in very dramatically this past decade. And we don't really see that slowing down here anytime in the near future, that you really see there still is a lot of land in the San Marcos area and New Brunswick area that can be developed for both commercial and residential. And there's essentially businesses that are moving in there that are serving both the Austin area and the San Antonio area. And so I would expect that's going to continue. And essentially, you know, there's some potential, even though I'm not exactly sure where that threshold is, that we could be referred to as a combined metropolitan statistical area. So you kind of combine Austin, San Antonio, and kind of look at that. I think it certainly is an interesting trend, and it also poses a lot of challenges. As someone who drives up and down I-35 a lot, I can tell you there's certainly challenges in terms of transportation, but we also have challenges in terms of water. And of course, we all are familiar with our challenges in terms of power or electricity. So anyway, that's an interesting trend. But the areas of that's filling in there is not really as diverse. And in fact, you've seen much of the growth in as many of the suburban ring counties, but certainly in Hays and Comal County. Much of that's being driven by growth of the non-Hispanic white population.
We hear from Texas Governor Greg Abbott that people in the U.S. are voting with their feet and they're moving to Texas. Renee Cross, when they're voting with their feet to come to Texas, what are they voting for?
Well, I think a certain amount of in-migration is due to our low cost, relatively low cost of living. For example, if you look at a home in San Francisco versus a home in Houston or Dallas, you get a lot more bang for your buck in Texas. So I think that's one major factor. And of course, the other factor is just the economic powerhouse that we have out of the Texas Triangle. You know, Dallas-Fort Worth, the North, Austin-San Antonio, and South. West, and then the Houston region in the southeast. I can't think of any other state that has that type of dynamic going on that is incredibly inviting, not only to new residents in terms of housing prices, but in terms of businesses.
But Renee Cross, we also hear from Greg Abbott that these Texas cities are full of crime and homeless people, and he has waged war. He's declared that these places are not good places to live. Is there some hypocrisy?
I think that some political statements probably made certain parts of his vote. I don't think he would be saying that while making, say, a trip out to California to talk about the Texas miracle.
And Rogelio Sainz, Department of Demography at University of Texas at San Antonio, what do you make of Greg Abbott's rhetoric trying to say Texas is a success story, yet we're seeing the rural parts of the state being emptied out?
Yeah, that's one of the things that you see, and this is part of the story that we're also hearing I'm having his moment there. Rick Perry kept talking about all the jobs that were being coming to Texas. But on the other hand, we continue to see that many of those jobs have been low-paying kind of jobs, those with limited benefits and so forth. So for many people, they continue to be at the margins, if not above the poverty level. So that, yes, we are seeing a lot of these jobs that are coming to Texas, but at the same time, those are not necessarily particularly for people with lower socioeconomic characteristics. They're not the kind of jobs that pull them above poverty.
But what does it say about the Texas education systems that we're creating jobs, okay? Tesla's building a gigafactory up in Austin, and they're going to hire 10,000 people to work there, and people have to basically move to Texas to get those jobs, and a lot of these manufacturers say they can't find people locally to take these jobs, Rogelio.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the other part of that challenge has been in terms of the low investments in education. We continue to see here, particularly in San Antonio, that are among the largest cities in the country, that we have some of the highest poverty rates, and at the same time, we still see those educational challenges as well. There are some positive things going on, for example, like with the Alamo Promise and so forth, that are bringing in people to higher education. But that continues to be some of the challenges, particularly here in San Antonio, where we find that a lot of the jobs are in the service sector that are relatively low wage and with limited resources, with limited benefits.
Okay, let's go to the callers. 833-TPR-TALK, and we have Michelle. Hi, Michelle. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. My husband and I moved here last year from Ohio. We were in the Rust Belt and we're in San Antonio and just saw that there was a lot of growth and opportunity, and it looked like a good place to move. And, you know, I had seen Texas politics from a distance and thought I understood some of it, but it wasn't until moving here that I realized that it's hard to grasp what it's like until you're actually in the state of Texas and watching it on a day-to-day basis at the local level and at the state level. So that's been a real learning experience that I was not expecting moving down here.
Did y'all come down here to start a business, or were y'all going to get hired? How did that work?
No, I had a job offer down here, and my husband's been working remotely for a long time, so it was easy for him to move, and it was just a good time for us.
So when you talk back to the folks in Ohio and they're talking about, should I move to Texas? What do you tell them?
They scratch their heads, honestly. They scratch their heads when they watch Texas politics right now. The local school district where we came from is allowing mask mandates, and my teacher friends and my parent friends feel very comfortable with that. And I'm watching my friends here having to deal with not being able to send their kids with masks or not being sure that their kids are going to have masks on all day. And, you know, there's a lot of questions about why, from my friends in Ohio, why does it have to be like this in Texas? Why is your governor doing things like this?
If you figure that out, let me know, okay? I appreciate your call, Michelle. Thank you so much. Renee Cross at the Hobby School of Public Affairs, what do you think of the call we got from Michelle?
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of head-scratching going on throughout the nation right now about Texas politics, whether we're talking election laws or mask mandates. But we have to keep in mind that, of course, a governorship is a political position, and Governor Abbott came under a lot of fire last year with some of the restrictions that he imposed via executive order, not only from Democrats, but from very conservative members of his own party. So I think regarding the mask mandate, the reaction last year has a lot to do with his decisions.
But Renee, you see people moving to Texas, you think they're going to have some culture shock?
Oh, without a doubt. Yes, I think they'll have some culture shock.
All right, let me go to another caller. Let's go to Jenny. And Jenny, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, well, I was calling because I just feel like this is a very important conversation as far as the census data and the fact that, you know, you said 3.1 million new voters in the South, you know, and the thing they have in common with the new growth in the suburbs is that the economic interests of those two groups of people are not represented by the Republican Party, but they keep turning Republican, they keep going red, in the state elections, because the Republicans are out there doing their groundwork. And I'm just thinking, you know, it really seems like to me that anybody's willing that's running for office in the Democratic Party, and the Democratic Party leaders at the Bexar County level and at the state level, need to be paying attention to these census data and selling the economic message in these counties and getting out there and talking to, because every time we lose, every time Texas goes red, we look at the South and we go, well, oh, you know, this is all going red. And the rural Texas counties are always going to go red, but they're not always going to go red.
Right.
Because if the Democrats will get out there and sell their economic message and talk about, you know, a lot of these people have an extra $600 in their bank account, myself included.
Okay.
You know?
Jenny, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate that. We're continuing our conversation, talking about the Texas census data and the social political implications of that. If you want to join the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. The number is 833-877-8255. If you're part of the Great Migration to Texas, we certainly want to hear your story. 833-TPR-TALK. Stay with us. On Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Texas census data and what's the shakeout with politics here in the state and also the social implications. If you got a question, give us a call, 833-TPR-TALK. Rogelio Sines at the Department of Demography at University of Texas at San Antonio, working off of Jenny's call before the break, and she was talking about how there's an opportunity for Democrats if they could get into the rural areas and pick up a few percentage of votes. We were talking about Schlenker County, Texas, west of San Antonio, south of San Angelo. They lost 30% of their population over the last 10 years, the fastest shrinking county in Texas. And Rogelio, that was a county that voted 88% for Donald Trump. So it makes me wonder if they're voting in their own best interest.
Right. There's argument that you look at what's going on in many whites in rural areas of Texas are voting against their interests. You're talking about jobs that need to be grown in those particular areas.
And health care. A lot of reasons people leave these rural areas is because they cannot access health care.
Exactly. That's where I was going next with that. You see all these closing of hospitals, and at the same time, an aging population that requires more and more health care and so forth. So that would be a message that would be able to perhaps connect with some of these areas, particularly as they see the kinds of life that they were accustomed to 20, 30 years ago are very much changing in front of them. And with the Republican policies that are being promoted and so forth aren't helping them at all.
Lloyd Potter, we hear a lot about how federal dollars are connected to these census numbers. What does that mean for, you know, what we got out of the census?
Well, I think it means that we'll do pretty well, relatively speaking. I think one of our challenges is that Texas has not expanded Medicaid. And so that limits the number of federal dollars that we get for providing health care at the local level for individuals who are living at or close to poverty. And so that's, I think, a challenge for us. But certainly we, with our population growth, a lot of the federal infrastructure dollars are going to be very important for us in terms of ensuring that we continue to develop our transportation system, can address, you know, our grid issues, and then that's my trifecta: is water, transportation, and electricity. It's kind of like those are three things that, for our population growth and the size of our population, we have to be really focused on ensuring that those are all elements that are strong and that we're planning well in advance to ensure that our infrastructure is will meet the needs of our growing population.
Okay, so the big question for you, Lloyd, is, was there an undercount? As big as the number of people moved to Texas, 4 million, everybody's happy about that, two new congressional seats, some people were warning that Texas could have an undercount.
Well, I'll give you two answers to that. One is, I don't know yet because we haven't really looked at the data. And two, yes, because I'm fairly certain, given historically the fact that populations in Texas and around the state, the country, have been undercounted. And Texas has a significant proportion of our population that is at risk for undercount. Populations that are living at or close to poverty, that don't speak English as a first language, that are living in rental property, that children is another, young children is another group. So last census, the 2010 census, we had groups that were undercounted. And so I'm expecting that we will have as well. And then add to that some of the anomalies associated with trying to conduct the census during the shutdown associated with the pandemic. The Census Bureau closed their field offices for a while and then didn't get back out. And then they weren't sure when the count was going to end. It was the end of September, the middle of September, October. So it just kind of all around. And then I suppose the other piece of it, which also is kind of one of the things that demographers really don't like, is having the census politicized. We want it to be, you know, plain vanilla, not exciting. We just want people to do their civic duty and be counted. And it became politicized both around the ending of the census, but then you also had the issue of the citizenship question that, you know, some people are concerned that that may have resulted in particular, people, foreign-born people, potentially not avoiding, if they could, participating in the census.
So quick answer for you. So Lloyd, could we have gotten three congressional seats if we had, if the state of Texas had invested in a complete count?
I'm going to say no. I think my colleague Rogelio would probably disagree.
All right, Rogelio, give me a quick answer.
I agree that that Texas could have gotten that that third seat. We saw very little, if any, activity from Governor Abbott in terms of investing. He didn't take the bully pulpit and encourage people to get out there and get counted in the census. And I think we see that with the undercount here in Texas that Texas was projected to possibly get that third seat. And the other state where we saw that take place was in Arizona, where Arizona was projected to gain a political congressional seat, and that did not happen. So those, I think, that we will be paying the price for the next 10 years with not having that third congressional seat, as well as with the federal funding that we left on the table.
Let me go to Bruce on the phones, and okay, hang on one second. Okay, Bruce, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm another transplant from Ohio, specifically Northeast Ohio. About 9 years ago, I came, met my wife over Twitter, actually, my now wife, and she was from Texas. I was from Ohio. She owned a place to live. I was renting, so the decision was obvious to come down here to Texas. And two biggest kind of shocks, one like a culture shock, was just like outside of Texas, a lot of us up north think, oh, it's all going to be a big desert like West Texas. And like, it's a big shock to see how green it actually is in San Antonio. Then the political shock is just like, Ohio has been traditionally politically purple between blue and red and shifting election to election. And it's been steadily becoming deeper and deeper red. And then in Texas, it seems to be slowly going the other way, where it's been traditionally deep red and then right, becoming more and more purple. Like the Democrats haven't quite broken that barrier yet, but they seem to keep on getting closer and closer every election cycle.
All right, Bruce, thanks for that call. Thanks for that update. Let's go to Chris also on the phones. Chris, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I've been here forever in my life, but I was wondering, with the increase in population, do you think we'll ever have more than just a biannual legislature to deal with growing population issues when it comes to transportation, infrastructure, and everything? I know people are going to bristle at that, or some people will, like thinking, like, oh, my they don't need to be in Austin all the time. But I think at some point we're going to have to switch to a more flexible system of having state representatives be doing that job more than it just being a part-time sort of gig.
Okay. Renee Cross, the University of Houston Hobby School of Public Affairs, do you think the growing Texas population is going to get Texas to have a full-time legislature?
If they do, it's going to be a long time from now, because Texas, besides being a conservative state for the most part, also likes its independence and being different. And I think it's such a drastic move. You know, if you remember, we're still working or governing under the Texas Constitution of 1876. To go to a full-time legislature is going to be a long process.
Right. And remember the fact that because we don't have a full-time legislature, we have a legislative budget board, which is made up of the governor, lieutenant governor, speaker of the House. They make a lot of decisions. They spend a lot of money. They have a lot of power when the legislature is not in session. And I don't think they're ever going to be willing to give that power up. So Lloyd Potter, real quickly, if you could tell me, where do you think we'll be in the next census 10 years from now?
But we don't see there being any significant slowdown in the growth. Certainly, if the projections that our office produces, you know, we basically see, you know, continued almost linear growth going forward. That said, and there are a lot of things that could happen that could change that. So something could happen someplace else that might push more people to Texas, or if we run out of water, or if we have a series of power challenges that could make Texas less attractive for businesses to come here and create jobs. And so that could cause a slowdown in the migration that we've been seeing.
And Rogelio Sáenz, where do you think we'll be in 10 years?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we see, even though Texas grew the most, that it was still lower growth than we experienced a decade ago, just like it happened in the nation. So that's due to the aging of the population. And even in the Latino population, we're going to see aging start to take place as we see reductions in fertility in the population, as well as immigration from Mexico.
You think greening the economy will change the Texas attractiveness, Rogelio? Very quickly, almost out of time.
Yes, it will.
All right. I want to thank all of our guests, Rogelio Sáenz, a professor in the Department of Demography at the University of Texas at San Antonio, Lloyd Potter, the Texas State Demographer and Director of the Texas Demographic Center at the University of Texas at San Antonio, and Renee Cross, lecturer in the Department of Political Science and of Social Sciences and the Senior Director of the Hobby School of Public Affairs at the University of Houston. I'm David Martin Davies. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Jackie Velez and Xiaowen Chen, TPR's summer arts intern. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.